This is Molly Smith introducing our annual Bringing America Back to Life speaker series. At this annual event, we invite those on the front lines of the pro-life and family movement to come together for a convention dedicated to exploring the full spectrum of issues and challenges that confront us as we continue to fight for the sanctity of human life, to protect our God-given family structure. We trust you will be edified and encouraged as you listen to our fine roster of speakers who by their articulate, thoughtful, expert presentations eloquently defend the right to life. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Uju Ikocha. Uju is an internationally acclaimed pro-life speaker and strategist born and raised in southeastern Nigeria. She has made pro-life presentations in 15 countries as well as the United Nations and has been featured by the BBC, EWTN, and many more. She is the founder and president of Culture of Life Africa. Her presentation at the Bringing America Back to Life convention is titled The 21st Century Neocolonialism of Sexual and Reproductive Health and Rights in Third World Countries.
I didn't, when I was asked to come and speak here at the Bring America Back to Life convention, I actually thought it was going to be like 40 people. So I said, yeah, of course. Well, I am so excited to be here. Really excited. But before I start my talk, there is one thing that I would like to do. And please indulge me, right? And forgive me in advance. But I would refer back to something that Molly had said about the mainstream media and how they've treated pro-life people. And I know that resonated with everybody here, at least almost everybody, if not everybody. But I would like to ask everyone to please raise their phones if you brought it. I don't mind if it's in your bag, if you're well-mannered and you're not like me and you have it somewhere, bring it out. Because today we will be the media. Today we're going to live tweet, perhaps not my talk, it might not be remarkable, but we are going to live tweet this event, right? When I came earlier today, I asked the media team here if there had been like a hashtag or anything. I said, I'm not hearing anything online. Are there people coming for this event? I don't know because no one is saying that online. But today I'm asking pro-life people to become the scribes and the historians. We should tell the world that there are many of us, more than they think. We should all come out of the closet and speak for truth, right? They use that, but we're going to reclaim that. That those of us who have been very quiet and some of us who feel, well, I will go for many pro-life events, as many as I can. Let me learn as much as possible and keep it so that maybe I can win in arguments. We're going to do a lot more. We will oppress them today on Twitter. We will use the hashtag back to life to put our presence out there on Twitter. If you haven't been doing it this morning, please bring out your phones and begin to tweet. I don't even mind. Do it. If I see anybody using their phone, even if you're texting a friend, I'm okay with it, right? So use the hashtag. If you're on Facebook, put pictures out. Do it as the event, as this convention is happening. And you do it today, you do it tomorrow, because we do have to make a mark on the world. And thank God for everything that we have in way of, you know, modern media, new media, because one day history will judge our generation for this thing called abortion. History will judge, as history now judges, you know, the people of Germany back in the 1940s. As history is judging the people, you know, who were alive in the 18th century during the time of slavery. But because history is so good at keeping count, then for those of us who are the resistant, for those of us who are speaking up for life, for those of us who dare to be pro-life in this generation, we have to leave the evidence that indeed some of us were ready to fight to the death for the unborn. And how do we do that? We do that by using the hashtag. We do that by putting it on Twitter, by putting it on Facebook, put it out, because one day history will judge us. But God forbid that we not leave sign, we not leave a sign, or we not leave the evidence for the generations coming after us, that no matter what happens, even if something is legal, it doesn't mean that it is lawful in the eyes of God. All right? And that's not even my talk. That's not even my talk. I was just saying this to start you up. But I'm hoping that you're going to put the evidence of everything we're doing out here today. So, my presentation is on this very long topic that I chose and then later regretted because I felt such a mouthful. and people are going to think, what has this got to do with us? This is the kind of thing I would the kind of talk I'll give like on a UN panel or something. But, you know, Cleveland Right to Life, they need to hear something else. But that's eventually I came to reconcile with my topic, the 21st century neocolonialism and sexual and reproductive health and rights in the third world countries. Mouthful. Anyway, many people, when they hear the word colonialism, really just think it refers to that shameful point in history where the African countries and many other countries in the world actually were colonized by a handful of European countries. Many of us think it's that. People actually understand more or relate more to the word slavery than colonialism because actually slavery is something that many people have come to reflect on, and people have so much internalized it, even in their parlance and the way they speak or what they say, that we now refer to things. You know, if you know someone who is addicted, you could say, for example, he's enslaved, right? So we've learned the usage of that word. And hopefully at the end of my talk today, I'm hoping that we would learn to use the word colonialism and not think it only refers to, you know, back in the 1920s and 30s when the Africans were under the colonial powers of Europe. Right. So when I was in university, way back when, in Nigeria, many years ago, I am older than I actually look, but let's not tell anyone. So when I was in university in Nigeria, there was a building, a house, that we called the Annex. It was a small building. It was a functional building, but it was a small building, linked by a small corridor to a much larger building. So back then in my university days in Nsukka, Nigeria, would say, oh, have you been to the Annex building? Or let's go to the Annex building, you know, for this, that, and the other. It was sort of an admin office. So I never really understood what the word Annex meant. That was the name of the building. It's not that I didn't know English enough for me to find out really what Annex meant, but it didn't actually mean anything to me. It was not really relevant. But it was only like 2 years ago, 18 months ago, when the word came back to me during the time when Russia was trying to annex the Crimea. Most of you heard it. So I thought, oh, they annex. That means to take someone over or to take over a country. So I started thinking about it. I started reflecting on it, the annex. And I thought, well, that is what we're seeing now happening with some of the African countries. Because this small building had its dignity. It was small, but it had dignity. But the building was cursed by the small corridor that linked it and tied it to the bigger building. Those who have been enslaved know that they are slaves. Why? Because they're shackled. Slavery feels painful. So those who have been slaves in the past Those who are enslaved by something can feel the weight of the chain holding them slaves. But a person who has been annexed does not realize that they're slaves. Because to be annexed means that you're tied to someone else, more powerful than you, not with a chain that is heavy, but with a very light rope. Very light. You could even feel grateful. Oh, I'm tied to this powerful person. As probably our small annexed building was proud of the big building that it was tied to. In both cases, for the person who is enslaved, they have a keen sense of the loss of their freedom. For the person who is annexed, they have a perceived notion of their freedom. Only when you try to move away from that rope that you would know the power of the person who has ideologically annexed you. Does that work? Okay, where are my slides? Awesome, hopefully that's not my slide there. Excellent. So, here is the reality of Africa. A lot of people hear about Africa, but we're actually 54 countries. So hard to talk about Africa because someone would be like, it's not a country. I know, it's home to 1 billion people. Almost 3,000 native languages spoken in Africa, thousands of tribes, ethnic groups. I'm from the Igbo tribe myself. Many creeds profess. There are lots of Christians, lots of Muslims, people who are pagans, Hindus. We have all of them. Therefore, there is not one single African culture. So I always just say this before I give my talk so that no one would come up and challenge me. So this is kind of a disclaimer. I do know that there is not one African culture. However, we do have a lot of common threads, things that run through the different cultures. Now, the dynamics of Africa is that we have so many moving parts, right? We do have the economy, which in many cases is, we're having all these problems and complicated things happening all across the continent of Africa. We have our politics, and sometimes we make the news, sometimes we don't, but it's just very volatile in some countries. Security, people have heard of Boko Haram and El Shabaab in Somalia, so we have all those problems. We have infrastructure issues. We have development issues. We have healthcare problems, and these are the things that protrude through which the people who now are trying to colonize us, that's how they get us. Because, you know, they promise us all sorts of things. They promise they're going to improve our economy. They tell us things like, oh yeah, when we bring abortion, maternal mortality would fall to the ground. Oh, when we give you contraception, women can then be empowered. Who has not heard that from Melinda Gates and the likes of her? So those are the things that actually make us very vulnerable. Now, here are the key players in Africa, those who control things, the donors. There are the nations, the Western nations who are interested in Africa. There are the organizations, and there are the foundations. So these are some notable people that you should know about. DFID, the Department for International Development. Some people call them UKAID, but that's actually just the UK government, right? That's the agency. That's yours, right? So that's a nation. It's an agency, but to us, it's a nation. UNFPA is the agency within the United Nations that serves population control. I'm sorry I put it this way, but that's truly what they do, and that's what they're about. You have the International Planned Parenthood Federation, whom I'm sure you know. Your PPFA, your Planned Parenthood Federation of America, is a child of this evil organization. There's IPAS. Nobody ever talks about them, but they are one of the strongest lobbyists for abortion in African countries, and they are actually an American organization. So, but no one in America knows about them. There's Marie Stopes International, a British abortion giant in its own right, but you will not believe it. They perform more abortions than Planned Parenthood around the world. Planned Parenthood performs about, 1 million abortions a year. Marie Stopes International performs about 3.3 million abortions every year. These people are killers. They only exist, I think, in about 37 countries. But they are killing people as they go along. I did a little investigation on them that they have now put out a letter to say that I lied. I didn't have to. I went just out there to Kampala, Uganda, and I spoke to a manager who had worked for them years ago, and she sat there and she looked into the camera and she told me exactly how they performed their abortions and exactly how they managed to deceive the government and they managed to deceive everyone. But indeed, their work was to kill unborn babies out there in Africa. So it is incredible. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The Clinton Foundation. These are a few. It's not an exhaustive list, but these are some of the main players. These are the powerful people who have not used chains to bind African countries, but they've used a very soft rope to hold us. And unfortunately, when you go to Africa, many people are happy. We're happy we have the Clinton Foundation. They're just helping us. But these people have annexed us, and they are colonizing us with their ideology. And many people ask me why, why would Melinda Gates want to destroy Africa? They're not bad people, are they? I'm not asking, don't answer. But people have asked why all the time. And I've thought about it a lot and I've reflected about it a lot and I have asked many people who know much better than myself. But I tell you that it's not for one reason, but for several reasons that the donors converge, because many of them have different interests, and then they converge. But this is not an exhaustive list that I'm about to give, but I believe that a lot of them are liberals. Politically, they are liberals in the West. They are of the liberal mindset. These are people from your Democratic Party, yeah, the Democrats here, the people from the Labour Party in the UK, the people from the EU who are liberals. So these are liberal governments, socially liberal. I know that there are conservatives who unfortunately are socially liberal, but these are people who are of the liberal mindset and ideology, and they've decided that Africa is a territory for them where they can actually exercise their skills in social engineering. So some of them are very interested in population control. Some just want to dismantle those cultural views and values of the Africans that they find offensive, or those views that indict them. So if you say that legal abortion is a thing for you, right? It's a thing for the United States or the United Kingdom that we must have legal abortion because women can be saved and all of that, I don't know, all their reasons. Then you see one small country, or one country that you consider small and weak or poorer than yourself, who's saying, oh no, we don't want to legalize abortion because we don't want to kill our children. So by the virtue of the fact that a country like Cameroon or Ghana or Kenya will dare to say, no, we don't want legal abortion. Why? Because, we don't want our unborn children slaughtered. They indict you. They indict you and you don't want that. At least that is what a lot of them, that's what we see. The hypersexualization of youth, the destigmatization of abortion for everyone. If everyone can sit together at the UN and we all agree that abortion is a good thing, then it's destigmatized. No one should tell a woman it's a taboo or an abomination that her child should be killed or slaughtered by an abortionist. And then they globalize their sexual revolution. There's a wonderful lady who I'm sure is here, Gabrielle Kilby. Gabrielle will tell you all about the sexual revolution, but I believe that they want to globalize it. So these are some of the reasons. It's not exhaustive, as I said, but here is just a small example of what colonization looks like in practice. So I have a page here. This was got from the Department for International Development, UKAID, so which is the UK government agency for aid. And that's their budget sheet for Kenya. I believe it's Kenya. So if you look at, I'm sorry, just a lot of numbers, but I'm just going to direct you. All you need to pay attention to is the reproductive and maternal newborn health and how much they're spending. This is actually in the millions, yeah? So in 2011, they spent $3.8 million on this. And this means contraceptives. No, it's not just maternal health and the pushing of abortion, so for lobbyists who are coming to African governments. So see how it increased. 2011, they dedicated £3.8 million to it. 2012, I think it was around the recession time, it fell to £3.3 million. And look at the big jump. 2012, they went to £6 million. By 2014, they're now spending £9.6 million. Look at how much they're spending in 2014. Can you see how it jumped from 3 million to 21 million just in a space of a few years? This is what colonization looks like, ideological colonization. Now, the funding which is available for sexual and reproductive health and rights in Africa is mind-boggling. I have been running this small organization called Culture of Life Africa for a few years now. And honestly, some of my friends who are here, John Smitten and some of my very good personal friends, know how much I have racked my brain and how much I've worried about funding. And I'm thinking, how am I going to do this work without funding? How is this going to happen? But I tell you that if I was actually running a sexual and reproductive health and rights campaign, if I was trying to go out to the villages to tell African women to accept abortion and contraception, this is how much money they're going to give me. I know for a fact because that's from a Ghanaian newspaper website. It's called Graphic Online. And look at the heading, NGO secures funding to promote safe abortion. This is from Ghana. And if you read the first line, look at how much they give this silly man. I don't know whether he has a degree. I'm not going to put out a lie here. But this was just an ordinary guy. And I tried to follow a bit his work, his NGO activities before. So I think he was doing some kind of activism about, you know, self-help and all this fluff, but nobody noticed him and he wasn't getting money. The moment he started saying, oh, I can help to spread the knowledge of safe abortion, mind you, he's a man, not a woman, but he says that and he got this amount of money from the West instantly. And of course, that funding came for him. And as the book of Proverbs says, that ill-gotten treasure will have no lasting value, no lasting value. Look at what he did with the money. That's him standing there grinning, right? And he's holding in his hands, I'll tell you what, I'll show you in a minute. Look at what was written under that picture. So he's handing over a manual vacuum aspirator to a representative of Ghana Health Service. Look at how stupid that is. How is that going to save women? That's what he used $150,000 to do. And he's only one of many, many people like that who have got such ready funding. He tried to do an education project. A friend of mine here is working for an organization called HEAL, and they try to help women, widows and orphans in Africa. I tell you, nobody's going to give him $150,000 to do anything. But try to say, oh, I want to give those widows and orphans, widows. I want to give them safe abortion, widows. You get me? So you want to, if you did that, you will get $150,000 very easily. But that's how the money goes. Population control is by stealth. Since 2012, Melinda Gates, in 2012, you know what happened, right? Melinda Gates came out and said, oh, I want a big life plan, I want a big project, and it's going to be aimed at African women, and it's going to be about contraception that will empower them. So since that day, since July, I think it's the first week of July, second week of July, she had her family planning summit, this is what has been happening. 69 poorest countries were targeted for this her project. They said they're targeting 220 million women in different countries, and most of them are African women, who have the unmet need. But who told them? Because I have aunties in Africa, and I have sisters, and I have, you know, cousins, and nobody's telling me that contraceptive is their great unmet need. They are giving them this horrible drug called Depo-Provera, which is causing a lot of problems. But with all the dangerous side effects, Melinda Gates does not talk about that. The people who work with her, they don't talk about that. Now, this is how you see the stilt. Every time you see Depo-Provera advertised, the new format of it, they call it the Siena Press. It's now called that. It's now in this self-injectable form. Every time you see the advert online, and I have gone through many adverts online, it's always a black woman holding it. Every time. So who's the target? Women in China? No. It's African women. All the time. Now, this is the website. Pfizer made the Siena Press, as Pfizer is the main distributor for this. There is a tiny, this is the screenshot that a girl gave me. She's, sorry, she lives in Ghana. And she told me, have you looked at the Siena Press page for Pfizer? And I said, no. Then she sent me this picture of the page. And here is what it says at the bottom. It's not approved for the United States. Siena Press is not approved for or available for use in the United States. Why? But that's because everyone is rejecting it and they keep suing Pfizer. But you give it to a woman in a village in Africa and she cannot sue Pfizer. So these are some of the things that they're doing to our children, how they are re-educating African kids. This is from Amnesty International, and that's written in French. But look at the age of these boys who should be thought something that would help them for innovation and creativity. These are kids, primary school children, and look at the poster they're holding that has a pen, as if it's an educational thing. If you understand French, what that says is c'est votre corps, connaissez votre droit. So it's your body, get to know your rights. This is what a Western organization is bringing into African schools, and the parents are not being told. They just have direct access because they are, you know, people from the Western world, and everyone is like, oh, nice, let's bring them into our schools. We respect them because they are the superior. They are higher than us. They know more than us. Then they come in and they start these campaigns about your body, your rights, and it's all about, you know, comprehensive sexuality education. That's a girl who went out as the American Peace Corps. Do you have a Peace Corps? Now, this girl is out in Burkina Faso doing her Peace Corps, this Cathy Northcott, and I was following her on Twitter, and these were the kind of things she's no longer doing. I think it's a 2-year service, and she's come back to America, but these are the kind of things that she was going out to do. The Peace Corps, I thought, was supposed to educate people in Africa, but this is what American Peace Corps person is doing. She says Marie Stopes provided examples available for contraception to show students like the implant. They're teaching our children in school about implants, and they are doing practice with them. And this is actually quite horrible. They're teaching them about condoms, and she said, oh, and they're giggling, but life-saving. Absolute rubbish. And that's a Nigerian advert, but it's from UNFPA. So it's from the United Nations Population Fund, and it says, no hoodie, no honey, which is a really disgusting way of advertising condoms, and my motto, it's my motto. That's a Creole, Pidgin English. So these are the things that, look at United Nations, look at what United Nations is bringing to us, and parents don't know, and they put all these things on YouTube, and our kids, African youth, impressionable youth, they're looking at these things, they're thinking, oh yeah, to go to the UN, to be as Western as possible, I have to get, I have to get rid of these values that our parents have given us. The United Nations is doing a project in Africa called Condomize. And I found out exactly how much. It's not, I didn't put it here, but I'm going to tell it to you now. I had been wondering for the longest time. I wish I would know how many condoms, because the UN is so interested in bringing condoms into Africa. I said, I wish I would know how many condoms come into Africa. And then only a few days ago, I found out that this organization, UNFPA, is promoted, like they know a way of tracking. They track everything they get. And I found out the numbers, they bring in into Africa about 1.7 billion condoms a year. 1.7 billion. More than 60% of all condoms donated go to Africa. These are the kind of things, horrible, you know, rapes and parties, and they are distributing these things. It's disgusting. That's what I saw in Senegal when I went to, Sierra Leone, when I went to Sierra Leone back in July last year. Look at the extent of poverty. Sierra Leone is one of the poorest countries in the world, one of the poorest countries in Africa as well. Look at the kind of shed where people live. But look at what I saw. On everywhere. I traveled 700 kilometers through the country. And there were so many of these billboards. And I was wondering, who is paying for these billboards? And you can see so much poverty around it. Then I found out who paid for it. They're all these people here. Global Fund, UNFPA, and then they always try to get the Ministry of Health to go with them. So it's as if, oh, we're not forcing you, we're not forcing you. But they are paying for it. The Ministry of Health isn't paying for it. Ah, this is so sad. So they sell abortion as health care. That was the standard and guideline for to end on safe abortion in Uganda. But how do you have a guideline on how to provide safe abortion when abortion is not even legal in your country? So when I saw that, I ran out to Uganda. One thing about me, I don't know, some of you who know me might know, I work a lot with Catholic bishops, and it's in a very unofficial capacity. John Smeaton knows a lot about me because he has gone out to Africa with me to see how we operate. When you hear I work with African bishops, you probably will imagine, wow, maybe, you know, the Catholic Bishops Conference hires Uju and she goes out. No, what I do, I get their phone number, then I keep calling them when I'm in the UK. I call them. So... don't give me your phone number. See, because I'll just keep calling them, right? So the bishop, the president of the bishops' conference in Uganda came to a little party that we had hosted during the last synod. I was with John and we were all at that dinner. And I said to him, my Lord, would you give me your mobile number? And he said, oh, yeah, sure. So he gave it to me. Then I went back to the UK and I found that booklet, that thing on how to end safe abortion. Then I read it. It's actually like 56 pages. I read it and honestly, it's an abortion manual. There's nothing else to it. And this was released by the Ministry of Health. So I started to call the bishops. And I kept telling him, I need to come out and show you this book. I need to come out and tell you how dangerous it is. So I pestered him so much that he said, okay, you can come for our next meeting and make a presentation. So I never, ever stop. And please do not stop once you start thinking about the unborn. Don't stop. You just keep persisting. Keep persisting, right? So I went out and we... You know, I did a presentation during the bishops' meeting about this because this is actually one of the most interesting things about this booklet is that it's 56 pages and it looks as if it's from the Ministry of Health of Uganda. However, when you look at the back, there are a few interesting things about it. This is in the index part. This is like a really expensive hotel, Hotel Africana. It's not a very cheap place to have an event, but these were some of the, what they call the stakeholders event. And when you look at the stakeholders, there are people from USAID. There are people from IPAS, there are people from Murray Stopes International, there are people from CEHORD, which is the Center for Human Rights and Development. These are all population control people, World Health Organization, people who call themselves stakeholders. Now, if America, if the American government is having a meeting, pray tell, if they say stakeholders, will you be thinking of a Nigerian organization? No. But why do private organizations from the UK, the US, call themselves stakeholders in Uganda where they're talking about abortion? That is unacceptable. That is colonization. Okay, so I have an umbrella. So meanwhile, as all of this goes on, the African women themselves continue to speak out against abortion. I've spoken to so many people in different African countries, and these are the kind of things you see once you give them a chance. They're saying no to abortion all the time, everywhere. This was a woman dancing at another event we had in Ghana, the March for Life in Ghana. That, you know, John Smeaton was there with me, and we were dancing, and there were people, were like crazy people dancing on the streets of Accra, and thinking, oh God, this is amazing, oh my gosh, because we're dancing and we're going right through the market square, and everyone is watching us, and people are praising pro-life people. Majority of people in Africa are actually pro-life. So these were some of the images from Cameroon. This was back, I think the year before last I went, and these women are fierce. African women, you don't even have to tell them to be pro-life. I mean, these people are pro-life. You don't have to tell them what to say. I don't tell them what to say. I just go there and I say, okay, what I'm going to do, I'll take a picture of you, and then I'm going to show the world what you are saying. Because their voices are never heard. When Melinda Gates goes out there, she does not seek out real African women. She would seek out the people she pays salaries, and then they tell her something that she goes on CNN and she tells the mainstream media, and that's how the mainstream media continues to disregard millions of people and their views and their values. And that's why I'm saying today we would learn how to become citizen journalists ourselves, and we will begin to tell the world our story. Why? Because people need to know and be converted, but beyond that, we need to leave a legacy for the generations to come. We have to tell our children that indeed, you must fight evil at all costs. You must fight evil at all costs. So women always choose life. Women always choose life in Africa. And this was when I went to one of Mother Teresa's communities out in Ghana. And these girls were girls that they had helped. One of them, she had just had a baby, the 16-year-old next to me. And then the other one was pregnant when I saw her. And I asked her, when are you going to give birth? She said, oh, I'll give birth like next month. You know, she was only 4 weeks out. But she told me she was having twins. And I'm looking at this tiny girl and I'm thinking in my mind, you're not going to have twins. You know, because she was just like that. She just looked like that. How can you be having twins, right? And then she sent me a picture. So I was wrong. But they chose life. Women continue to choose life when given a chance. Then even in rape cases, Vivian was raped. Look at her. She's poor, and, you know, she's really poor. But what they tell us that, oh, yeah, women in rape cases, we should allow them, that is not true. You don't heal a woman by killing her child. You don't heal a woman by killing her child. Ever. So it's just for people to know that around the world we are united on the same issues. These are, you know, people challenge me and say, why do you keep saying Africans this, Africans that, Africans are pro-life? But even a poll was done in 2014 and that was what it looked like. The first one there is whether people accept abortion, whether abortion is morally acceptable or unacceptable in all circumstances. You can see that the lowest there is even South Africa, and South Africa has had legal abortion since 20 years now. They've just passed 20 years the legalization, and if you wonder, it was legalized by President Nelson Mandela. And I like to tell people, because we, you know, a lot of people love Mandela and he has such a great legacy, but we cannot forget. We cannot forget that he opened the door to legal abortion. Okay, so, but even then, 61% of people in South Africa said that they would never accept abortion under any circumstance. 10% said it was acceptable. And if you wonder why it doesn't add up, the people in between are people who are like neutrals, or people who don't know, people who haven't thought much about it. But look at the other numbers. Nigeria, 80% of people say they will never accept abortion. Kenya, 82%. Look at Ghana, 92%. And someone tells me, oh, we need to legalize abortion. You know, when we go to the UN, we hear people saying this kind of rubbish. And I say, well, that means you're going to have to overpower 92% of a people. If you do that, you have become the colonial master. So I need to show you a video very briefly. I hope some of you, I don't know if you know what has happened in the last few. Oh, I need to tell you something. Thank you for voting the way you did. Thank you for voting the way you did. I said I was going to say that, but I forgot. Why am I thanking you? Because one of the first things President Donald Trump did was to reinstate the Mexico City policy. I have heard people who are working on the opposite side of us say to me, oh, but that is the gag rule. A girl called me from BBC or somewhere in the UK, and she's saying, you know, we want to talk to you about the gag rule. I said, do you mean the Mexico City policy? She said, huh? I said, yeah, but that is not the gag rule. It is the good news. It is the good news, all right? So what has happened since that? It's as if the gates of hell were broken open and people have been screaming. If you know what has happened or if you followed it, let me tell you a little bit of what has happened, because it's because of you and how you took power away from evil and gave it back to the forces of good. You snatched it out, right? And you have taken care of us. You have thought about the world. Perhaps you weren't even thinking it. You just wanted a pro-life president. You wanted the worldview, the pro-life worldview, to be brought back to the stage again after 8 years of exile, right? And what has happened is that what you've done is that you have saved millions of African babies. So people started to donate money. And all these feminist women in Europe kept saying, oh, we have to make up the gap and make sure Africa has money again for safe abortion. That woman who is the Minister for International Development in Canada says, oh, yeah, we have to make sure women have their dignity. So I had to, they were doing a campaign called the She Decides campaign, and I made a short video. Can you play that video, please? It's only 4 minutes long, but I see that my time is up, but we're almost at the end.
Mexico City policy has just been reinstated by President Donald Trump of the United States of America. And this is the policy that the United States will no longer be funding organizations that promote or provide abortions in their international work. This will affect organizations like Marie Stopes International, the British abortion giant, the International Planned Parenthood Federation, and the United Nations Population Fund. What is most shocking is the reaction to the reinstatement of this policy. Many countries in the West, including Canada and the Netherlands, have decided to come together to raise funds. Not funds for food in Africa, not funds for water in Africa, not funds that the Africans can use as they want. Instead, they are gathering together to raise millions of dollars that they are dedicating to the so-called safe abortion. What is actually most disheartening is that these Western countries who are coming together to raise funds for the so-called safe abortion initiative have not even thought to ask the Africans what they want or how they feel. Now, how do the Africans actually feel about abortion? In 2014, Pew Research carried out a very robust survey. They asked people in different countries around the world, including African countries, what they feel about abortion. And it's so very easy to see from this research that upwards of 80% of the people who were questioned in the African countries found abortion morally unacceptable to them under any circumstance. And I myself, in my many travels to different African countries, I have spoken to many women and I have asked many people about what they think about abortion. Now, here is what they said about abortion.
We are saying big no to this abortion.
No to abortion.
No to abortion.
We say no to abortion, whether safe or not safe. We know one time.
No to abortion.
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 No abortion.
We're saying no to abortion.
Have it. No to abortion in Africa. So for these Western nations to gather together to raise money for their so-called Safe Abortion Initiative, that means they will be ignoring the voices of the millions of people who are in Africa and who have said already that they do not accept abortion and they do not want abortion under any circumstance. This is the new colonialism. This is cultural imperialism. This is the dictatorship of the wealthy donor. What the Africans are asking for all over the continent is not your so-called safe abortion. What we are looking for and what we're asking for is your support for safe delivery of African babies. Thank you.
The time has come when we break those bonds that hold people as slaves. The time has come when the people who have been colonized will stand to full stature and say what they truly believe. I have given all this talk about colonialism in Africa, and you're probably thinking, oh yeah, the dear Africans, that's true. But this actually refers to you as well. There is an ideological annexation which is going on at the moment. The liberals, the social liberals, are trying to annex your children. They are going into your children's schools. They are trying to reclaim the government. They're trying to reclaim every public space. They're doing these campaigns like the She Decides campaign, where they say we want dignity. We want women to have the safe abortion and so on and so forth. My people, these are the elements. These are the various elements and facets from the playbook of the colonial masters. We have seen them work in history. And because we are people who actually bother to look at what has happened in history, we say it will never happen to us again. We will tell our own stories. We are going to be the ones who will become historians and scribes of our time. There's just one little thing. Let me go to just the very last page and show you something, because there is one saying I'd like to finish on. Where is that presentation? Just the very last pages. Dear Jeff? Great. Before that. So, there's a writer in Nigeria who's Chinua Achebe. I don't know whether you've heard of him. Chinua Achebe has a saying. First of all, I don't know if you remember this picture. This was when Melinda Gates was given an award by President Obama just before he left. This was November, I think, last year. November last year. And Chinua Achebe says that until the lions have their own historians, the history of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. They are saying what they're saying, and they're praising themselves, and they're awarding themselves. We gave the Africans contraception. We are giving, Common Core. Whatever it is they're doing here to oppress you. They actually oppress you, then they come out and get awards for oppressing you. Until the lions have their own historians, until the lions begin to write their own stories, the hunt will always glorify the hunter. In my tribe, there is someone, you know, there's a title given to a warrior called Owago, the killer of lions. You are killing the lion. And because you are the hunter, you glorify yourself. A man who kills a lion is called a warrior, Owago. But when will the lion begin to tell his own story? My people, the time has come for us to tell our stories, and that's why I asked you to raise your phone at the beginning. We will then become the lions who have learned to become the scribes and historians of our time. We are going to tell our story, and our story is just one thing, that even if evil is legal, it would never be lawful in the eyes of God. And we would never stop fighting until we see the death of evil and the end of evil. Thank you.
You have been listening to Uju Ikocha, internationally acclaimed pro-life speaker and strategist from Nigeria, and a 2017 Bringing America Back to Life Convention speaker.